Hello and welcome to Thinking Critically, a D&D discussion, a podcast where we deep dive single word concepts or ideas within the Dungeons & Dragons 5e framework. My name is Danilo and I like all kinds of games and the crunchy mechanics that make them tick. You can find me on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram and I'd really appreciate a like or a follow. Today I'm joined by Mike Hibbert. Thank you ever so much for joining us. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Hi, and thank you for having me on the show. It's an honour. You're, in fact, my first ever guest podcast role, so I'm quite excited. Well, a little bit about me. I'm, 51 years old. I've definitely got a face for radio these days. I've been in and around the D&D role-playing scene for many, many years. First started when I was probably pre-teenager, I think I was 12, back with the D&D box set, the red box set. I don't know if you remember that or seen it.
A little bit before my time.
Yes, I suspect that's a lot before quite a few people's time. So I've played every edition of D&D, been around a lot, played lots of other role-playing games, moved over heavily into board gaming a few years ago after a failed Dungeons & Dragons evening. We decided to play a board game instead and didn't look back for quite a few years. And then I've got back into role-playing quite recently, in the last year, like a lot of people, lockdown inspired, really.
Yeah, I think it's probably similar for a number of people then. I don't know what has made me think of it, but a friend sent me a news article yesterday saying a lot of people are into fishing as well. 100,000 more people in the UK are into fishing because of the lockdown. So I wonder what other weird and wonderful things people are re-finding.
That's really interesting, actually. And I did warn you prior to us starting, I did say that I do tend to go off at a tangent. One of our favourite programmes at the moment is the Bob Mortimer and Paul Whitehouse with their Gone Fishing. Have you watched that at all?
No.
Do you know what? It's an absolute delight. It's two old funny guys who've both been told that they need to slow their lives down for heart-related problems. Just go fishing together and talk rubbish for half an hour. It's fabulous.
Oh yeah, that sounds great.
It truly is. It's on the iPlayer. Go and watch some.
Oh yeah, my missus and I have run out of things to watch, so yeah, that's a good timing. So, maybe surprisingly, as I said, the topic today isn't fishing or TV, it's actually it's actually podcasts. So what do podcasts mean to you, Mike?
So I've been a creator and a consumer of podcasts for quite a few years now, and I love what they can bring to you. I love the fact that you can, there's just tons of them out there, isn't there? You can find a subject that you're passionate about, or that you're interested in, or that you just have a desire to understand a little bit more about, and you can bet your bottom dollar that somebody somewhere has created a podcast detailing it all for you. So, you know, I was just writing down a few podcasts that I'd enjoyed, I'm sure we'll talk about those later. But in terms of what they mean, they're just a brilliant way for people, so creators, to reach their audience and talk about stuff and in as niche manner as they want to. So, you know, you don't have to worry about being a bit too nerdy or a bit not nerdy enough, or whatever your niche is. You can go and you can be you, and people either like you or they don't like you, and you'll never really know. I love them for that, but also I love them for that ability as a consumer to say, you know, I fancy listening to, just picking something at random. I fancy getting into Pokemon Go. Let's listen to a few podcasts to really understand how it's done and, you know, what it's all about. Mm-hmm. And then you can decide, that sounds cool, that doesn't sound cool. You know, without all the investment and the time and things like that, you're learning in a shared community. And I love that.
That's a really nice way to put it. And I think I follow a couple of podcasting subreddits. And talking about niches, I've seen a lot of questions of people have put on there of, here's my podcast that's about 17th century coins or something that is super niche to me, but exactly like you said, I'm sure there's a huge audience out there for that really specific topic. And it's, you know, a benefit of today's technology that people who are interested in 17th century coins can just Google it and there'll be, as you said, there's guaranteed to be a podcast about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if you watched Wayne's World back in the day. Mm-hmm. You know, huge fan. But I loved that idea of public access TV. So mm-hmm. me as a creator could sit there and talk for 10 minutes, 20 minutes, whatever, about buzz cut hair cutters and things like that. And people would either listen or they won't listen. Now, that technology was never available to us UK side, and I don't really know how accessible it was stateside. But podcasts, I can do that. If I want my own radio show of music that I've created whilst I talk about 13th century ramekins, then plucking things at random, then I can do that. And people can either listen or they don't listen, you know, and I can just put it out there.
Mm. Yeah, it's quite sweet. It's quite nice.
Yep.
So how do you think the nature of podcasts has changed over the years? And let's just keep it broad. You know, let's not keep it specific to D&D just yet. We'll dive into the details later on. But hands up, my experience is quite limited at the moment, which might be surprising considering I'm recording one as we speak, but but in terms of listening, I don't have a huge library of things I follow, unlike okay. my girlfriend who has many, and what I do follow is very modern and very recent, so I wasn't there when they first came out. I probably didn't have a phone that could support them when they first came out. I was rocking a retro phone for way longer than I probably should have done, but yeah, so how do you think they've changed, or has it always been the similar kind of theme and that kind of public access ethos has stayed the same throughout? What are your thoughts?
That's a great question. I think, so as I mentioned at the start, I have been a creator in the past, so probably, and I was trying to remember the timeline just before we started, probably as early as 2006, 2007, maybe a little bit later, I can't quite remember. I was a co-host of a board games podcast called Into the Gamescape. I can promote them because you can't get hold of the audio anymore, so there's no danger of you going back and listening to just how truly terrible we were. So we did probably 70 or 80 shows, and we had, I don't know, I think at our peak, we probably had about 1,000 listeners
wow.
worldwide. Well, and that's part of it. I think back then, there was a lot fewer people doing it. So we were heavily into board gaming at the time. So lots and lots of fairly heavy-duty board games, war games, Warhammer, some of the real sort of in-depth, geeky hex and little chit kind of war games, that kind of stuff. So we did quite a lot. There was three of us, and I think that again was an interesting dynamic. People hadn't really heard that before. It was one guy or maybe a couple of guys. And I think back then there was less options, so you had maybe a dozen different podcasts to choose from. We were always a little bit niche because we were English and lots of people hadn't really heard. You know, board gaming then was either a very European, German-based hobby or American. So the fact that there was, you know, three guys from Blighty waffling on about board games, I think picked us up quite a few listeners. But the really interesting thing is that I don't think a lot has changed since then, other than there are obviously more podcasts available. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, the pie has got bigger, but there's a lot more people taking slices out of it. But for example, when you said to me, download Audacity to do the recording, that was what we used 14, 13 years ago. So in terms of technology, not a lot has changed. We recorded on Audacity and did all our editing and chopping out the rambling, of which there was plenty. Mm-hmm. And then we put it up through Libsyn. I don't know whether they're still going. And they just had a little web page and people downloaded it through iTunes. But other than that, I don't think a lot's really changed.
Hmm. Yeah, some things never change. Maybe maybe Audacity has a dark theme now. Maybe that's the the biggest change.
Well, to be honest, looking at it, it looks exactly the same. You know, I'm sure they've done lots of work on it. I'm sure it does lots of far more cleverer things than ever it did. But yeah, for a while, I got relatively good at, you know, chopping bits out, making it all sound seamless, dropping in interstitials and goodness knows what.
Explosives, which is more terms that I'm learning as I...
yes. I have noticed a couple of mine as we were recording.
Yeah, so that's a good segue, actually, because the next point I had on my notes was editing, funnily enough. And I know we're not keeping it tabletop-y for the time being, but I think when you're discussing a meta topic like this, you're going to have to indulge the hosts a little bit, and I don't think I could have picked a better guest for this particular topic. So talking of editing, I think you mentioned you did a bit back in the day. You know, you still hone those skills at all, or have you, you know, is it like riding a bicycle, or how did you find it when you were doing it back then?
So I'm not sure. I haven't done any for a long time, so I've fallen off my bike, haven't quite tried getting back on it yet. But you know, looking at the voice profile that Audacity is doing, I suspect it's pretty similar. So we did two passes of the edit. So there was three of us that did the podcast, and we all had different skills. So Paul, one of the co-hosts, his skill was that he just didn't give a damn. So he was like, "Yeah, you guys just do whatever. Once I finish talking, I'm done."
Yeah.
I was very aware of pops and crackles and background noises and making sure the levels were right and all that kind of stuff. That really, I'm a bit of a perfectionist with stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I really wanted that to be right. And the other guy, Si, was much more aware of the content and what we were saying. And, you know, he was, I suppose, our brand guy.
Yeah.
So we would go through, we would either do it together, where we'd sit down, I'd do a very quick pass of the sound and say, "Well, I want to take that out, I want to take that out, I want to take that out." And then he'd say, "I think we need to, that little bit there, I think we probably want to take that bit out." Because we were very heavily family friendly. So yep. Any swears or that kind of stuff, we whipped out. But yeah, other than that, I think the editing process is probably very similar these days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That sounds like you had a really good mix there of people that can kind of plug the gaps. And I found that it takes me, I'm bringing that time down, but it used to take me three times the length of the episode to edit an episode.
Really?
So it's about 3 hours for every 1 hour episode, give or take, which I've now gotten down to maybe 2.5 just from moving across the knowing Audacity a little bit better and moving across and a couple of shortcuts and whatnot. But I must admit that's the classic where they don't tell you about that before they start thing, that you go, "Hey, you're starting a podcast, but you're gonna have to edit it, and that takes time, and I am also a perfectionist, and half that editing time is me debating whether I should cut out a certain thing, or is that S just a little bit too S-y?" Ooh,
yep.
Okay, sod it, go back 5 minutes and start to and have to go back, because it's just festering there in the back of my mind, that one little thing that is bugging me, and I have to go back and fix it.
So it's the little bits like that. So I've just noticed, you know, when you said that, I chuckled. So there's a little blip on my line that says, you know, Mike chuckled. And if it's my podcast, I'd be thinking, right, I'm just going to flatten that. I'm going to take those chuckles out. And you know, but then potentially do you lose a natural conversational start? I mean, why do people listen to podcasts?
Yeah.
Is it just for information? I mean, I'm not sure, particularly with a theme and something like this. So what are your listeners? Are they podcast fanatics, or are they role-playing fanatics that want to, you know, so yeah, it's a really interesting one, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's what's really nice from a human being perspective is I've noticeably got better. I'm not good, but I'm better than having never done it before. And I think a lot of the expertise comes from, and in my crowbar way of bringing us back into D&D, is very similar to a Dungeon Master experience of knowing, just having this kind of innate understanding of when is a good time to cut something out or leave an in, because it actually adds to the conversation in the same way that a Dungeon Master might know when to allow something and let something slide because it adds something to the gameplay, versus being like, no, let's just move on because, you know, I'm just going to say no in this instance. And that's something that my first episode that I edited of this podcast was, it took me forever and I was probably way too strict on getting rid of all the filter words, just because in my head at that time, it was, they weren't content. They were just garbage. Mm. Whereas now I'm like, actually, no, that if I leave that, you know, in, it actually helps the conversation flow a little bit better. And I'm like to think that I'm slowly moving towards that middle ground of, let me cut out the real wastes of time, but leave in here and there just a little drop of humanity, just so it still sounds natural.
Yes, I think you're right. We're not, I mean, I certainly have never been to finishing school, and I didn't go to the, you know, I don't work for the BBC. So you've got lots of, you knows, ums, ahs. It is really interesting, actually, because we have, obviously, we're all doing a lot more of these calls, both for this kind of thing, but also professionally. You know, I spend most of my day now on calls.
Yeah.
You know, and you do end up counting things like ums and ahs and, mm-hmm. you knows and stuff. You know, you're, in fact, I'm really aware now that I've said, you know, four times.
Yep.
In this entire...
it's like that thing where people say, like, you're breathing right now, and then suddenly you can't not think about breathing here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm very aware of people's, you knows and ums and ahs, mm-hmm. and things like that, because you hear it so much more. I think if you're in a meeting with somebody face to face at work, you don't fill in space in the same way that you do on a podcast or actually, you know, on a Zoom call or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a curse of editing, I suppose, is that you have to train yourself to pick up those things, and then when you stop editing, you've still got that talent just knocking around. So when you're talking to people or listening to calls, and a colleague of mine just on Friday, she was delivering some training, and we worked quite closely together, and she was like, I'm a bit nervous because I hate the sound of my own voice, and I'm always saying and ahs, and I was like, yeah, I know. tell me about it. And then I gave her the example of how if I record an episode of this Thinking Critically podcast that might be recorded to 1:15, after I edit it down, it's usually about 1:05. So between the filter words and just gaps of silence, I can usually get rid of about 10 minutes worth of essentially dead air.
Yes. So
let me put that into perspective for you of how much people and are. So don't worry about it, because it's everywhere and everybody does it.
And I think it makes it conversationally fair. I think people listen to stuff, and if it's too polished, it just doesn't sound natural.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It sounds like you're reading from a script.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to, let's try and talk about some tabletop role-playing games for a change today.
Okay.
So one of the reasons I personally started this was, yes, I think that I'm a moderately okay DM, and that would other people like to hear me play in a game? Yes, maybe. However, from what I gather, there are an awful lot of actual plays, which are D&D or other tabletop RPGs that are either streamed or recorded and then put as YouTubes and podcasts, where they're actually playing the game, in quotes. And I use quotes because depending on the production values, they're not always playing the raw version of the game, shall we say, or a public version of the game, for lack of a better term. So, I don't know, do you listen to any actual plays? Are you familiar with any? Have you been in any?
I listen to three or four, so I regularly listen to three or four different podcasts. Generally what I do is I'm a bit of a completer. In Myers-Briggs terminology, I would be a completer finisher. Mm-hmm. So I tend to binge on a podcast. So I listen to everything and then I try and stay fairly current. So I don't tend to have lots and lots and lots on the go at the same time.
Yeah.
I just, you know, all the stories get confused and mm-hmm. blurred. But you're absolutely right. I think there are dozens and dozens of real play podcasts out there. The ones I tend to listen to is Dice and Desire. Those guys are very funny.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm currently working my way back through that at the moment. Roll the Damn Dice, I listen to. And again, I listened to the current ones and now I'm sort of catching back up.
Mm-hmm.
The Dice and Die podcast. Now I have actually caught myself up on those. Those are the main ones that I listened to when I first started listening. And I'll be honest, the reason I started listening to them was that they were running through the Lost Minds of Fandelva,
something like that.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. And I was going to be running that for my son and some of his friends. So I mm-hmm. thought, ooh, I'll listen to that. And do you know what? They've done a really good job of taking a level 1 to 5 adventure and turning it into an entire sort of campaign world. And, you know, they're great. I really like those guys.
Oh.
So in terms of those are the three main real play podcasts that I listen to. But you're right. I think one of the issues that I've always had is it's almost I'd like to do a real play podcast, but I think my play style is probably not something that other people would necessarily want to listen to.
Hmm.
You know, we muck around, we have fun, we tell in jokes.
Yeah,
we still do in jokes from 20 years ago, kind of thing. you know. You Rock has always become You Rick to us because of a typing mistake that someone made in World of Warcraft 15 years ago. You know, it's little daft things like that that perhaps wouldn't translate to that well.
Yeah.
But also, you know, we do stop and delve into the rules and we do go, oh, hang on a sec, can't quite do that. And I think, you know, you're either a rulesy kind of thing or you're a hand wave the rules kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you want to stop and check rules and things like that, it kind of, if you're live streaming on Twitch and stuff or whatever,
yeah,
then, you know, it doesn't necessarily work if you say, well, hang on a sec, let me just check the rules. And also, you know, I'm sure there's lots of things that I do completely wrong.
Yeah.
And I'm, as I think I said earlier, I'm a bit of a perfectionist and I'd be really frustrated being playing something and, you know, people then saying you're doing that wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, really?
Brilliant.
Yeah. So, yeah, for many reasons, I think maybe doing if somebody said, do you want to come along and do a real play and just jump on the show and do a one-off or something like that, it'd be great. But maybe doing my own... Yeah, I think my fragile emotional ego couldn't take that.
But I mean, the fact that you can, you're more self-aware enough to say that is really good to start with, because I imagine there's a lot of people that don't even have that thought process. Yeah, you touched on a really good point there of almost you have to change the game a little bit because you're catering for a different audience and a different production values and different platform, which sounds obvious when I say it. I mean, I've lost track of the amount of times I've said something on this podcast and then said to myself, well, that sounds obvious, Dan Lowe. Well done. You've provided zero value whatsoever. But
but if it's not obvious to you immediately, I'm sure there's lots of other, you know, you end up saying things that are obvious and other people are going the same. Oh, yeah, I never thought about that.
Yeah, thank you for reassuring me there.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, so that, like, it makes sense when you say it out loud, but I think it's a lot of things that maybe people don't think of in the same way that I didn't necessarily think, Dan Lowe, you've got to do 3 hours of editing for every episode you do. Maybe people don't think, hey, I'm going to have to consider how we play quite heavily before we start recording. Otherwise, you're right, you can maybe fall into that trap is maybe too strong of a word, but that niche to use a softer term, of here's just me and my friends playing and who wants to listen.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I really do. The Real Play podcasts that I listen to, I really enjoy.
Yeah.
You know, there's a few others that are on my list that I want to get onto. What I tend to do is I'll dip in and have a listen. So, yeah, Roll Britannia and Intelligent Check. I've listened to a couple of episodes, both of those, and I like the style. So they're in my, you know, I need to go back and start at the beginning or at some point find a good jumping in point. Now, that would maybe. So if you're a creator out there with a podcast, that would be a really good feature to have, is a where to start thing. So maybe say to new listeners, all right, go and listen to episode 1 because that's where we introduce our characters. But then episodes 1 to 50 are this part of the adventure.
Yeah.
And then we go on to this and then we go on to this. So start here, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good idea because there's always going to be a few warm-up episodes where you're still kind of bedding in the technical issues and making sure everyone's comfy and yes. so on. Yeah. So yeah, if you condense all that down to like the first arc or the first chapter, then you can say new players, basically you can probably start at chapter 2 and their production values are a lot better and everyone's a lot more, you know, hitting the ground running kind of thing.
Yeah. And that chapter of the story has kind of finished and, you know, all you need to know is that XYZ is the big bad end guy. Yes. And we're trying to do this or we're trying to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe just do a little intro. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there we are. Just sorting other people's podcasts out for them. Sorry, guys.
It's a 2-for-1 benefit, this show, everybody. No, that's the, you know, please. That's the purpose of this, especially this episode more than others, is insight and experience and knowledge and stuff. So please go ahead. But the more people that come out the other side of listening to this and go, hey, I didn't know that going in, that's all I'm after. So
good.
Please. So we've danced around the topic a little bit, but and you've obviously mentioned a couple that you like. Now we can start to anonymize things, because the perhaps difficult question I want to ask you is, what makes a good real play podcast and what makes maybe a not so good, and maybe now you want to not use names.
Yeah. Okay, so I think for me there's a few things. So what I like about the podcasts that I like and that I listen to is I'm not listening to a story so much, but I'm transported to a table.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly the Roll the Damn Dice guys and the Dice and Die and the Dice and Desire guys, they take me to their table. So while I'm listening, I'm almost I'm like an NPC or non-player player. I'm an NPP sat at their table, just not saying a lot. And it's sometimes actually saying a lot because I'm answering their questions and I'm, you know, bantering with them in my head kind of thing. And I think that's what I really like about some of the real play stuff, is that I'm there. I'm literally at the table with them. I'm going, no, don't do that, you banana. What do you think you're doing? No, don't go down the stairs. And they're doing something. And I'm like, no, I know that's going to be a bad idea. Don't do it. And I'm actually there at their table with them. And that's brilliant. And I feel like, you know, if they, once we're done with all this lockdown malarkey, if they said, come down the pub, have a pint with us, I'd be there and I'd be straight into the banter with them.
Mm.
And I think that's the really important thing. I like back and forth quips and jokes and stuff like that. And, you know, you Rick kind of comments. I like all that banter, and being at a table where there's all that kind of banter and silliness, I think really works.
Yeah.
So that's what I like. Now, the stuff that maybe leaves me a little bit cooler, a little bit colder, and it is a really interesting one, and this is possibly a controversial statement, because I am going to name names, not in a bad way, but I read lots of about one of the podcasts, and you know, everyone would have heard of Critical Role.
Oh, yeah.
And I've never listened to the show, to more than, you know, watching a few excerpts and things like that. And I love what they're doing, but I also don't love what they're doing.
Yeah.
In almost equal measure. So I will explain rather than just leave a.
Well, let me just say, like, you don't have to worry about me because on another episode of this macro, Nathan and I talk about Critical Role. And firstly, you've proven my point in that you can't really talk about D&D without talking about Critical Role because of how ubiquitous it is. So thank you very much for proving a point I made a few weeks ago. Very happy
You're
with
very
that.
Welcome.
There's a very evil grin on my face. And secondly, in that episode, you'll find that, yeah, I'm not like a huge, huge fan. So please don't worry about offending me.
Okay, cool. So yes, what I love is they have brought D&D to lots and lots and lots of people. So when I was a kid, as I said, my journey into D&D started when I was 12, and literally nobody had heard of it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I started playing. None of my friends knew about it. There were two guys at school that played it. That was it. So I started hanging out with them. I got into it based on the Warlock of Firetop Mountain books.
That rings a bell. Yeah. I've heard of that.
So I got that. I can remember going with my nan to buy that, probably in the summer holiday of going into big school. And I loved it. And that's what got me into that whole journey. But there was nothing like listening to other people doing it or anything like that.
Yeah.
And then we'd go to, there was a shop in Bristol where I lived called the Forever People. So if there's any old people, old gamers will have remembered that, but probably nobody else will. And you could watch the, it would have been the students, I guess, back then from Bristol University. They would play in the shop on a Saturday morning. Yeah, oh, it was brilliant. It was like spectator sport for me. You know, I'd go and watch them play. You know,
Dungeons and Dragons?
Yes, yeah.
That is, okay, that's really cool.
Yep, oh, it was, because it taught me so much. And Critical Role, are the, you know, the modern day Bristol University geeks playing D&D on a Saturday morning. They have brought it to the masses. And, you know, for that, I think it's brilliant. There's so many people on D&D Twitter that just wouldn't be there were it not for Critical Role. So that's great. But also, I think it puts unfair and unrealistic expectations on DMs to make it a show, to do all the voices, to have props and minis and amazing maps and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I know that if I was, so I DM for my son and a group of his friends on a Friday afternoon after school. Mm-hmm. And we use Roll20. So I've just bought the module that we're doing. And I do it on there, but it's always full of, oh, how do you get this thing to do that? And it's all very a bit slow, a bit clunky. Mm-hmm. And I sometimes do voices, not very often, but it's descriptive. It's theatre of the mind for me.
Yeah.
And that's very much how I play. And that's my play style. Now, had they come from the, look, we've seen Critical Role, we want to play D&D.
We want that. Need
exactly. Exactly. I'd be, you know, I'd be the world's worst dungeon master for them, because they'd be looking at it and saying, you know, well, you know, dwarfs are supposed to have Scottish accents, aren't they? Why aren't you doing that? And why aren't you doing this? And, you know, can we have minis and, you know, glam it up a bit? And so I wonder how many people, and this is something that you can't ever answer, but had D&D become as popular as it has, with Critical Role being less exuberant, I wonder how many more people would be staying with the game or keen to have a go at being a DM and saying, you know, I'll give that a go. Because I know I see quite a few people on Twitter saying, I'm the DM, I'm really, for the first time, I'm really nervous about it.
Yeah.
And, well, it's just a game. Just roll with it. It's absolutely fine. There's nothing to be nervous about. Just discover your style and just go for it. And I wonder how much of that nerves is born out of not going to be as good as Matt, and, you know, I'll ruin the game for my players, when actually all your players need is a framework, you to tell them what's going on and for them to do some stuff.
Yeah, they're kind of self-imposed expectations on themselves, which no one else really should have. You know, it's the DM's game to a certain extent. So, yeah, as you said, find your way of doing it and roll with it.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I look back to some of the early modules and things like that, and it was very much a DM's framework. I think you said earlier you're nowhere near as old as me, so you won't remember the sort of the Against the Giants modules and the Expedition to the Barrier Peaks and things like that. And even within those as purchased modules, so you buy a module to tell the story for you, huge swathes of it were... was like, here's an entire floor, just populate it as you see fit. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I can remember as a 13-year-old DM looking at that thinking, oh, what am I going to do? How can I do that? But necessity dictates that you come up with some stuff. So as a DM, it's for you to tell the story. I don't think you need to worry too much about how you tell that story. Just tell the story, frame it, and let the players come up with what they want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm absolutely the same school of thought. And I was in a discussion with somebody on Twitter probably about a month ago now, where we were talking about exactly that, actually, the Mercer effect, as they call it, because someone made a post about it and something. And this person I was talking to said, oh, come on, is that really a thing? If your players are thinking that, then this, you know, then they're idiots, or there's something wrong with them. You know, I can't believe anyone would ever think that. And I said, well, it is absolutely a thing, because Matt said it himself. So, and B, if exactly like you've said, for a lot of people, that's going to be their entry point. That's going to be their gateway. And so that's going to be their only single frame of reference. So it's just going to happen. So absolutely, yes. Like, you know, that's what they're going to expect. And setting expectations is super, super important if that's the case. And it happened with a couple of my players who said, oh, I've watched this thing. And I've gone, yeah, don't. But, you know, that ain't me. So, you know, temper your expectations, because it's going to be a different game.
It's a little bit like watching professional football on the telly versus having a knockabout with the kids down the park on a Sunday. Exactly. You know, I'm never going to do bicycle kicks and goodness knows what in the box because, you know, I'm 50 years old. Yeah, I think that's a really interesting, and maybe that's a wider, that's not just Critical Role. Maybe that's a Instagram, TikTok thing. Maybe, you know, because I've got kids and, you know, they're all wanting to do on their bikes. They all want to be able to do massive long wheelies or massive great big jumps and all that kind of stuff. You know, when I was a kid, a long time ago, I was happy if my bike got me from A to B without anything happening, particularly, you know, not falling off was, you know, was good enough for me. Mm-hmm. Whereas now, you know, I'd lose count the amount of times that I've fixed the kids' bikes because they want to do bunny hops. They want to, you know, they can't go over a speed bump without trying to bunny hop over it or wheelie over it or jump off curbs. And, you know, it's all because they've seen all the mountain bikers. And
yes,
it's seeing other people do stuff is so much more available nowadays that actually that almost that joy of discovering it yourself has gone.
Yeah, it's a bit bittersweet, isn't it?
Yes, particularly because we're talking about podcasts, which is literally about watching and hearing other people do something.
I think let me make it not just another Danilo Bash's Critical Role. So there's another pretty much my only podcast that I D&D podcast that I listen to is called Not Another D&D Podcast, or NADPOD for short, which is done. A, it's American. B, there's only three players, and they're all from College Humor background. And that is kind of very, I guess, not very rules strict. It's very, you know, soft touch. It's a lot more improvisational. It's a lot more of a improv comedy podcast with some D&D stuff to help it move along. And my point being is that can also set a very different perception of the game. You know, if that was somebody's first impression of, you know, maybe they've come from College Humor or the other work the other guys do on the podcast and have come to that and gone, oh, well, this is D&D, is it? Where you know, the way they play of telling jokes, and maybe there's only a couple of rolls a session, and the rules are very loosey-goosey in some places, and then they start to play, and you come at it from that direction, it can be, again, a very different experience. So it's not all Matthew Mercer's fault, I suppose.
No, of course. I completely agree. I think it's just difficult, isn't it? I think you can't base your play style on anybody else, and I think players probably understand that. And I think you said earlier, it's a self-imposed thing. I don't want to let my players down. I want them to think that this is cool. But do you know what? I can't remember every single rule. I have to look things up. I can't quite remember. I have a running list of what do we do about that. Do you know what? I don't know. But I'm going to say for this one, just give me a
exactly
blah 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 check, and then I'll look it up. Or if you need to do it again, I'll look it up then. But just for today, let's just say do an athletics check.
Yep, there's such an elegant solution, and again, it's one of those things. It's like, duh! It's of course it's the answer, but it's that thing of let me look and run with it today. If I was grossly wrong, then full disclosure, players will change it going forward and retcon it to a certain extent. If it kind of worked and it doesn't break the game, then we'll do that going forward. And that's it. That's such a such a small, easy decision, and it can be, that question can be resolved at the table like that. Move on.
We've just had that. We're running through our Thursday night game. We're running through the against the Dragons. So Tiamat, and so we've finished the first one, the Horde of the Dragon Queen, I think it was. We finished that, and we are literally this last Thursday just started the Rise of Tiamat. And our DM, first thing he said was, so you're effectively level 8 now. Do you want to redo anything on your character? So do you want to have gone back, retcon, taken a different, so I'm a bard, so taken a different college, changed some spells up, that kind of stuff. Now, I know some people would look at that and go, oh, you can't do that. You can only change one spell in between levels and things like that. But for us as a group, we learnt a lot. We fought the White Dragon on top of the flying ice castle. So do we need to put more damage output? Do we need to do this? So let's work at it as a party and say, how does it work best for us? And it's our game.
Yeah, for sure.
Got to work best for us.
Yeah, I did something similar with my players. It was just a lot earlier on at level 3. I basically said, okay, you've had 3 levels now. Do you want to change literally anything? And I'm happy to accommodate it and retcon, because they're quite big decisions. And if you're not happy with it, then I'd rather we change now rather than you sit through another 10 levels of unsatisfaction.
Yes, I think that's right.
You said there about, it's your game and you got to play it, in the way you want to play it. Do you think doing it for a podcast or a stream changes that mentality a little bit, and you have to say it's not just our game anymore, we have to consider the wider world? And if so, what considerations have to be made?
Oh, that's a good question, isn't it? Who owns your IP? I think it does. I think you have to be more aware. Certainly the guys that are, I have every admiration for the guys that are out there playing whilst streaming live and people are watching on Twitch, because I've been listening to stuff and people saying, I'll do this, and then a couple of minutes, and I'll think, oh, I'm not sure you can do that. I'll cast this spell. Like, hang on a sec, I'm pretty sure that's got a casting time of a minute. You're not going to do that in combat.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter. And then 5 minutes later, somebody says in the Twitch, oh, you can't do, pushes glasses back on the nose, you can't do that. So it is their game as much as your game, by the very definition that you've opened your front door and said, have a look through our front door, have a look through our windows.
Yeah.
And we are there, kind of thing. So yeah, it's a really good question, and on the fly, I'm not sure, because yes. So let's take that. You can't do that. It's a minute spell. Moment of being corrected. Oh yeah, okay. Against then the next time you want to do it, well, I'll do that, and always getting it wrong. I don't know. But yes, you are opening your doors, and you are, if you're inviting people in, then I think you almost have a, you have an obligation to your audience as much as anything.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
It's I'm sorry for putting you on the spot now.
No,
I'm grinning, but I'm sorry. But it is one of those things that's like, yes, it's your game, and yes, you should run it how you want and just enable other people to view it, but also in the same way. Like, you can't have your cake and eat it, right? You've got to open that front door and allow people to say, oh, I don't like the curtains you've got on your house. As in, they can provide feedback and criticism, yes. Which kind of implies then that maybe, as you said, you've got a responsibility to a certain extent to A, accept that criticism, and B, potentially act on it if it's legitimate.
Yes, absolutely. If you're going to say we've got X number of people listening, watching, if that's something that's a factor, a feature that you're sharing, then yeah, you've opened your front door, you've opened your shopping shop window, and you are selling to somebody, regardless of whether that's not important to you. You know, whether you've got one watcher or 500 watchers, you're still opening and saying, you know, watch us play this game.
Yeah,
you know, they are an audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've had no real negative feedback, so I just have to assume my podcast is perfect. So
yeah, that's... or nobody's listening.
Oh. All right, we're ending the show there today. Thanks for coming.
Sorry, mate.
So I touched on it earlier about different types of actual plays or real plays of there's more improv versus planned versus serious and more jokey kind of ones. So I think it's safe to say, because they've admitted it themselves, that Critical Role is not scripted but has more railroady parts, because just like we've just been saying, they appreciate that they've got a story to tell and it isn't just for them anymore. So they've said, you know, I think Matt said in the past that he might approach a couple of the players ahead of the time and say, this is what I've got planned. You might want to think about how you're going to play it at the table, kind of thing, just so that it's not a mess when they come to record it. Versus something like, well, I'm sure NADPOD do it, but more improvisational games where it is just let's make things up on the spot. I don't know. What do you prefer? And also in the same breadth, more serious, you know, heavy emotional beats versus goofy, we're just mucking around. What do you prefer? Do you think any podcasts are more suited to a certain kind? I don't know what your thoughts are.
Yeah, so I think, that's another really good question. I think I am more emotionally drawn to the keeping it real type of podcasts. So the ones that I tend to gravitate towards are the ones that play the same sort of game that I play with my friends, I'm quite happy with a bit of railroading. Obviously, by definition, in fact, you know, we all live busy lives these days. I sadly don't have hours and hours to spend writing modules or writing adventures as much as I'd love to, and nor do my friends. So we tend to play stuff that's bought. I'm running the lads through Tales from the Yawning Portal at the moment, and I kind of have to railroad them, because if they go off on a tangent, I've got nothing prepped. I don't have the time, and I don't want to do a substandard, you know.
Yeah.
You just waffle kind of.
Yeah, just random nonsense just for the sake of it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, yes, you've got some. You could random generate dungeons and goodness knows what, but it doesn't make for a good story. So I tend to keep them on track a little bit, and I know my DM did that a reasonable amount through Horde of the Dragon Queen, because you've got a book that you've invested some money in and you've invested some time and, you know, emotion into, we're going to tell that story together effectively. So I tend to be quite happy with a little bit of railroading. I don't have any objections to You know, you go down a road, it forks left and right. Left takes you off to somewhere that I haven't designed yet. Right takes you to the bit that I've done. Do you know what? And if we go the wrong way, just swap it around. I don't mind. having said that, I don't like to feel that I have no control as a player. So I can remember once a long time ago getting a really good critical hit in against a key NPC when we'd damaged her quite a lot. And there was no doubt in my mind that that critical would have killed her.
Yeah.
You know, I think we were playing some of the slightly alternative rules around I can't quite remember how we did it, but like rather than doing hit point damage, you have sort of the ability to like hit dice damage or something. Okay. Back then, I think that was an option back in 3 or 3.5 or 4. I can't remember. But I was of no doubt that it would kill her, and her response was obviously the DM wanted to keep her alive for later on, was to disengage from combat and run away. It was like, well, I'll fire an arrow, or you can't see where she went. Like, hang on a sec. You know, I'm in a woods. Explain to me how somebody running away from me, I can't see where they've gone. Immediately, you know, that was being railroaded to that level was disconcerting. And so it's quite a lot of words to say. I'm fairly happy to go with the flow, really.
Yeah.
I do tend to prefer the fun, not taking it too serious. I like us to take it fairly serious. So I have sort of table rules that I like to abide by. You know, when the DM says, right, it's your turn, I like people to be ready. I like you to know what it is you're going to do. You know, it frustrates me as a DM if I say to particularly one of the lads who tends, you know, they tend to be a little bit less focused.
Yes. Yeah.
Right, it's your go. Oh, right, what can I do again? So it's like, you can plan your go. That's a great thing to do.
No, I've very similar in, you know, mix of both, and every so often I have a heavy moment, but then there's a lot of whimsical stuff in between to keep it lighthearted. But yeah, also I've given my players a soft ultimatum over the Christmas period to say, get your stuff together, because, you know, if you don't have your turn ready, then you'll take your dodge action and I'll move on, because we don't have time anymore to wait 50 sessions in, know your stuff, or take the dodge action.
That's basically, you know, I really like that. Yeah, if you're not ready to do something, just dodge.
Yeah. I'm not about to kick him out of the game and say, you know, you've got half a second to decide. There's a window. But if they're still like, oh, maybe I should do this, maybe I should do that, then I'll just go, okay, you've taken the dodge action because you've run out of time on your turn. Sorry, move on.
Yeah, no, I like that. I think it's fairly safe to tell you this, because I don't think the guys will, well, so the lads I teach on a Friday, I don't think they'll be listening. But one of them on Friday tried to, he's playing a warlock, and he tried to cast a spell. And I said, hang on a second, I'm pretty sure that's not a warlock spell. So we looked it up. No, that's not a warlock spell. He went, oh, right. Oh, isn't it? Oh, I'll cast this instead. Yeah, no, that's a cleric spell as well. so know your character. He wanted to play a fighter.
Yeah.
And then whimsically, just as we were rolling at characters, said, oh, no, I'm going to be a warlock. Okay, that's fine. Learn your character. Because I'm not going to tell you what to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll give you a little bit of advice because you're all new to it. But I'm not playing against myself.
No, and one thing that you can be sure of is if you do, the royal you, ever make a podcast or a stream, and if you don't know your character, then you can bet the people that listen definitely will and are going to let you know that they know.
Oh, absolutely. You know, absolutely. If you're playing a bard and, you know, you're toe-to-toe and you're not casting Vicious Mockery and things like that, people are going to say, what are you doing? Why aren't you playing a fighter? Quite rightly.
Yeah. It's that opening the door to feedback is the nice way to put it.
Feedback is a gift.
So we've talked about role plays, of which I happen to be part of one, Dungeons, Dice and Dudes. That is very much the DM has said he wants it still to be us mates playing first, and then the second is that it's a podcast. So that is very much what you were alluding to earlier on with, at the moment, it's still very much full of, you know, in jokes and memes and just five guys playing dice and playing Dungeons and Dragons with dice. So that is interesting. And admittedly, I haven't, as a player, had to change too much around how I would normally play. I know that over the Christmas period, we moved to streaming, and what I can say is that the DM was, I do not envy him at all. A, it's difficult enough DMing remotely, just trying to get, you know, it's like herding cats sometimes. So
yeah,
trying to do that. Regular technical difficulties of, is everyone on Discord? Yes. Is everyone on the, you know, Roll20? No. Why can't you? Oh, I can't, my camera's not working. Okay, right. You know, just trying to sort that out. Plus regular Twitch malarkey stuff, just trying to arrange all that, plus music, plus recording. Yeah, I was like, yeah, I'm really happy to just be a player right now.
Yes, yeah. If it gets to be more than your normal day job in terms of complexity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was like, I'm looking forward to just going back to podcasts and playing in person, because then it's just a microphone slammed in the middle of the table and he's happy. So there's obviously, we've talked about real plays, but there is a subset of which we find ourselves recording for now, which I've dubbed kind of alternative discussion shows. And by alternative, I mean as an alternative to actual plays. So I don't know if you listen to any like this. There are a few. I didn't think there were many, but since dipping my toe in the social media network of Twitter and stuff, more have become known to me. So I don't know if you listen to any or have thoughts on these kind of meta shows.
Yeah, so I think they've definitely got a place. I think it's important that there are other shows out there. You know, it isn't just about playing the game, it's about, you know, understanding the game and understanding all the other bits. And one of the main ones that I listen to is the Dads and Dragons show. I don't know if you've come across that. They did a real play bit over Christmas, but the majority of their show is more sort of digging into the rules. So they've done like an overview of all the character classes and what sort of role the characters fit into, and how do you, can you tank with this, and can you DPS or DPR with that. And I think that, yeah, you're absolutely right, there is definitely a market out there for that kind of thing. Just listening, you know, it doesn't have to be playing all the time. I can get just as much enjoyment out of listening to somebody else just talk about their experience of playing a rogue or playing a warlock. I've never played a sorcerer, for example. Not tried it. Probably won't try it. Not because I've got anything against it. But it's just that there's other classes that I want to play. But listening to someone else talk about it, you know, that's interesting. I listened to other people talking about playing bards and thought, well, I'll give that a go. And actually, do you know what? It's the most fun character class I've ever played. And I got that from listening to other people talking about playing bards, and, you know, they're not just bards, they're not just a pretty face.
Yes.
So yeah, I think there's definitely there's an audience for that. And you know, I think this is how we got together in terms of this, was, you know, I had previously said, if I did a podcast where I just chatted about D&D with somebody, would you listen?
Oh, yes.
And quite a number of people said, oh, yeah, I would. So, you know, you never know, that there might be another one of those on the market soon.
Well, if you ever need any guests.
Absolutely.
So I don't know if there's anything else you wanted to talk about.
No, not particularly. You know, outside of the, I suppose the only thing outside of the sort of the D&D world of podcasts, you know, there are some really good stuff out there. It's almost a case of, if you want to find out anything, just hit up a podcast. I've listened to some. I don't know if you've come across the Bellingcat stuff that they've done. But if you like a good debunking of conspiracy theory style of podcast, then definitely give them a go. Mm-hmm. And also some sort of real story stuff. I listened to one about a tunnel called Tunnel 29. I think it was on the BBC. That was absolutely brilliant. That got me through some long journeys to work and stuff. That was all about a guy that, so after the wall went up, he escaped from east to west Berlin. And literally the first thing he did was, once he escaped from east to west, was then to tunnel back to get a load more people out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, listening to his life story, just, you know, remarkable stuff. So yeah, don't just focus on D&D podcasts, because you can get ideas mm-hmm. from anything. You know, that whole idea of tunneling in, breaking people out of a lockdown city, you could use that in D&D almost without changing it. You could just use the whole story.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a lot of room for inspiration, and even with the conspiracy theorist one, what's better for your D&D campaign than some crazy conspiracy theorist cultists?
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Okay, so the only thing I wanted to... My final thought is that one thing I found while doing this particular podcast is sometimes it can feel like, you know, a drop in the ocean a bit. And I'm usually quite self-confident and, you know, more so than a lot of my friends, just based on what I wear half the time, would tell you I don't really care. But one thing that surprised me was, you know, just having the motivation sometimes to be like, should I keep going? Should I keep recording? Should I keep editing? So it's, you know, again, I guess it's a personal thank you to yourself for joining me on this journey and for, you know, inspiring and giving me the motivation to say, you know, at least I care enough to be on. So download, keep on trucking. So I guess what I'm getting at is that having that self-confidence and the thought to, is this worthwhile? That's a human experience, and you're not the only one. If anyone's ever listening and thinking, is it worthwhile? The answer is, well, just do it, and I'm sure it'll be great.
Yeah, no, I get that. And I know we joked earlier about, about, well, hey, maybe no one's listening. And do you know what? If no one's listening, we've still had fun. And it's, indeed. I think it's one of those things, isn't it? You don't necessarily do a podcast for listener counts, or, you know, I've got 800 people listening, or 1,000 people listening, or mm-hmm. 4 people listening. And if it is 4 people listening, and one of them's your mum or something, does that really matter? And I don't think it does. So I would echo that sentiment. If you're out there thinking, maybe I should do a podcast, or I fancy doing a podcast, but, you know, who wants to listen to me? Even if it's just one other person, then you're providing something that someone wants to listen to, you know, and it's a big old world out there. Even the big guys, when they're getting a million listeners, I don't know how many Critical Role get, but let's assume they get a million listeners. You know, we're a planet of 7 billion people. Even the big guys are only getting a drop in the ocean.
Mm-hmm. Good. Thank you for that. We've ended on a really nice, wholesome comment.
Yeah. Give it a go.
Yep. Cool. All right. Well, thank you ever so much for coming on. Is there anything you want to plug?
Well, I mean, the only thing I would always plug, I produce D&D journals. I have a small website, mikehdnd.card.co. It's my pinned tweet, so go and have a look. They are bespoke journals aligned to each of your individual character classes. Lots of space for all manner of bits and bobs. Go and have a look. I actually think they're really cool. I'm just trying to convince everybody else that they are.
Well, actually, thank you for reminding me, because now's a good time to tell you that I've got one winging its way to me, courtesy of Royal Mail, as we speak.
Oh, fabulous.
Not a paid promotion or anything, just for full disclosure.
Amazing.
I did some research before, obviously, the podcast, and saw them and was like, hey, they're cool. And I actually bought the wizard one, because in the Dungeons, Dice and Dude actual play podcast that I'm in, I play a wizard. So I thought, hey, I'm gonna grab on for that. So yeah, that's in no way endorsed, but a legitimate interest on my part to buy
fabulous.
One. So, yeah,
thank you very much. Thank you very much.
So yeah, do check them out, because they do look very neat.
Thank you, and thanks for having me on the show. I've really enjoyed it.
It's good. I'm glad. It's been a pleasure. It's always good to have different experiences and different points of view, and it's been a pleasure listening to kind of your experience of not only in the past but also your experience now at the table and how you approach listening and kind of things you look for. So yeah, it's been really useful. Thank you to all listening at home. If you have any thoughts or comments, you can find me on Twitter at danlow_dnd. Otherwise, thank you all for listening, and good night.